You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening. If you wish, feeling the backbone, sweeping aside, if possible, any assumption that there's something wrong with the backbone or with the looking, the feeling. So sweeping unkindness away out of our approach. Our approach into discovery of backbone. What is that experience? What's easy to feel? What comes first? And what's kind of more in the shadow? Not assuming there's something wrong. Even if there's some discomfort or pain. Or worry. About your backbone. Just letting fresh and backbone meet. And noticing what the mind does with the fresh meeting of backbone. The unfresh way the mind processes. Just feeling the difference between fresh and not fresh, direct and processed, filtered. Sensation and image. Immediate, and feeling about, thinking about. Any or all of what we call backbone, received as it is. Like a beautiful, unknown, precious creature. The way a tree can be perfect, no matter what shape it is, however far from the ideal. Perfectly itself.
letting it be that you can feel some and not all. Letting it be that there's always more to discover of backbone. And maybe stretching a bit, playing with releasing the tension of trying to feel backbone. Releasing the tension of our ideas of backbone, memory of it. Is there still backbone? Forming, feeding, and filling itself with life, feeling itself. Not trying to make it more or less. But maybe gentling and resting back, we might sometimes feel a bit more of the wholeness of the backbone. The okayness. How it is itself already. Maybe it's fun to also start to include the back of the body, not just the backbone, but spreading out to the sides a bit, down the legs, the backs and sides of the arm, back of the head. Deflating the pressure to reach forward. To get it right. Or to make it solid. And resting back into the back of the body. More like a flow of experience. That somehow holds itself together. By itself. The breathing back. Resting back and letting it happen. The back, the breathing, and the feeling, the receiving of it. you don't have to do it right. Trying less. Forgiveness for the way trying keeps coming in. Just melting, trying and trying not to try. The breath washing through the body like waves, erasing footprints in the sand. It's okay as it is, perhaps. Just staying here is one option, or it's possible to kind of expand, resting into the back, letting that expand to include sounds. Almost as if the back extends beyond the body. Wide and spacious. Revealing a sensitive, wide awareness that's like the surface of a lake receiving the rain, receiving sounds and body sensations that easily. Even though the mind may be busy with something else, something in us is wide, widely open, receiving sound, body, fluid experience. And no matter what I think about what I'm doing and how I'm doing, that already awareness and receiving goes on and on by itself. Are there any questions or anything to share? The physical postures?
Yeah.
Okay. So also there's on the board most of the options. And it's also for you to just find out for yourself what's good. But a few things to keep in mind are, if you want to line your back, then having some cushions under the knees usually, so not flat on your back usually. Everyone's different. But whether you have a cushion under your head or not, maybe trying without, and then if you need, adding. And then it could be not just a cushion under the cushions under the knees, but also under the heels, that the heels are as high or higher than the knees, which are higher than the hips. So like that. And then often lying face down for many people is deeper. It gives access to deeper meditation. So having cushions along the main body usually, and then maybe a little extra something under your ear so the head is not twisted so far to the side, but you can still breathe.
So your head is not up to the side?
So it's not twisted so far to the side, right?
Okay.
It's, if I have something that's holding my head at the, like, one-quarter angle. Mm-hmm. More, well, it's not like there is the posture that you're supposed to do. It's just a suggestion of something to try. Yeah, you don't. I mean, you can try. There's things you can do. But mostly what we've found to be very helpful, first of all, if you're interested in trying that, you don't have to. It's for each person to feel what feels like a way to deeper meditation. So for when you're starting with lying down meditation, it takes time to get a sense of what's what. And it's also usually the first few days, we're so tired that there's a lot of resting, literally resting that happens, which seems to be fruitful. And so what I find, rather than a waste of time, it seems to be fruitful. What I found as I've encouraged more and more meditation through deep rest is that the same or maybe even more shifts that are towards insight and transformation happen without an unnecessary, now seems unnecessary, intensity, friction, willpower, body pain. So that is not to say everyone should lie down all the time, but in general, that's what's come across over 15 years. So what that means is usually when people lie down, sometimes they're sleeping. Sometimes there's then waking up and feeling fresh, and a real sense of a natural meditation just happens. That wouldn't necessarily happen being tired and trying to keep pushing through and make myself return to the object and all of that. So with lying down, there seems to be more space for meditation that's not me doing it, and an awareness that's not, is not the same as me paying attention to that. So letting resting happen, when you find that you're just so, so tired, then if, like, I snore if I'm really tired, so I lie on my side or my belly if I'm that tired, or I sit up. And then sleeping in your room, resting is part of it. But it's also not that it's resting and then meditation. Like, during that letting go into resting, as I said, it's fruitful. A lot of different things that later we can see were able to come through from kind of other planes of the mind that we're blocking out when we're trying in such a rigid way to be me meditating. At the same time, there's still the need to train across the grain of habit energies, which are so strong. And also, maybe even deeper than habit energies, the, let's say, biological programming, etc. So, sometimes lying down, it's possible to notice there's distraction, and even to get the feeling of that in the tissues. And then that same awakeness that could notice I was distracted or asleep or whatever, or noticed I was doing a good job or whatever, that kind of is very clean and without an agenda, that same kind of clean background awareness might allow for a kind of gathering together in the lower belly, for example, or in the back of the body like we did today, or in a kind of field that receives sound and body like we also did today. Just so quietly, without waking up the me activity, the kind of trying to bend myself into shape, but kind of leaving room for that goodness of gathering. The goodness, another kind of pull that's subtle, but a deeply natural pull out of habit energy, the relief of coming out of habit energy to be gathered in a restful way. But of course, like any practice, it takes a lot of, it feels awkward, messy, wrong. and that's not to say that just to keep pushing through with something, but to feel free to experiment for ourselves. And that's some of the things that might happen along the way of lying down. Sometimes when people talk about mindfulness, or, well, basically they're talking about mindfulness, that the word alertness is used. We should be alert and relaxed. But unfortunately, for most of us, being alert means being alarmed. And then if we think that's what we should be doing, what we're doing is reinforcing the alarm system. And so to find that there is, through relaxation, another kind of awakeness that isn't alarmed, that can receive the alarm system, whether it's on, off, it's okay. So that's another way to say. Awakeness. Anything else? I hope so.
Yeah, but is it? Because I feel when I'm lying, and then if investigation starts arising, then there's the thought: is this too much? Is there too much activity already? Even in investigation is one thing, but then also even in like actively relaxing, is that too much? You know,
yeah.
But feel some tension somewhere and awareness comes to that, and then the intention to calm into that tension, is that too much?
Good. So what I like is the question that came naturally, is that too much, as an inquiry investigation. And it's very similar that when it feels like maybe it's too much, it might not be, sometimes it can be really helpful to be quite firm. So it's loose. There's not a fixed way that has to be. But there might be a really precise way that things arise that we can go with, we can agree with. And so the question, is it too much, might have a feeling of being really appropriate.
Yeah.
just playing with, well, is it available to do less, to let there be less? Just is the feeling this maybe is too much already a feeling for doing less or letting it be less? And so similarly, again, it's not, there's not this one way, but the two kinds of investigation that come to my mind right now as very fruitful. And one is, even in that, like the question, is it too much? There's a chance to feel that the extraness of an activity, of a habitual way, to feel it physically, to feel the subtle sensations of that in the mind state. So that it's a felt way of investigating rather than a thinking way of investigation. It's getting to know the shape and texture and qualities, taste, etc., of, so to speak, taste, I mean, of, usually, of the habit energy, for example. So we can sometimes feel the root of it, not trying historically to find out what happened so much, that could come about, but more the felt way where we can start to feel what started this, what turned on this programming, what's that basic fear or whatever there at the bottom. And then the other would be going back to the word vichar, which we could translate, usually people translate as inquiry or investigation, but it's could also be more a felt wonder or marveling or awe, which is not necessarily distinct from when I spoke about being the humble thing yesterday. Just like the way I spoke about it yesterday, that humble meeting with whatever it is a kind of vichara, a kind of inquiry, a kind of willingness to be in touch with what is as it is, to really meet it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then the questions might come, and that might be really part of someone's way, and that can be included. But those two that are not so verbal, those two kinds of vichar can be very natural. But again, it's maybe through the discovery of how much I've been trying and how much my approach doesn't really fit me, how much habit is there, etc. And what about less? Which could just be feeling that it's too much, and I don't know what more than that, but just feeling that it feels a bit too much. I can feel the uncomfortableness of that, and that already is a way to open.
There's still room for activity. Sometimes when I hear the approaches that emphasize the non-doing, sometimes I wonder to what extent, you know, and I feel like, well, of course we can slip out of the middle way in that direction too, and so I guess what I'm hearing from you is that there is some doing, there is some activity, but it's just trying to be as aware of how much baggage can I let go of in that doing, how much extra doing is there.
And then another way to say that is it possible to leave space a little bit longer with not knowing? Which means that equals courage.
Sorry?
Which equals courage. To leave space not knowing what to do, is there a right or wrong thing to do, what's happening, and all of that we don't know, but we're in touch. And then something might kind of come up out of that, and also a shaky kind of like experimentation or emergence can happen. And sometimes when that we leave, let's say there's maybe a habitual argument inside and we meet it differently and leave space and something emerges because there's a need. Sometimes that ends up that we invent a way that we can use again. It doesn't always work, but sometimes we can go back to that and actually use it, so which is a doing. So there's a doing that's a happening, And then there's a doing that's remembering and being attracted towards something more wholesome, less habitual, less aggressive. And also leaving space for our willingness to be stretched. Into honesty, into feeling clearly, like that when there's reaction in the mind, that's happening here. However understandable the reaction, that's within my realm of receiving with tenderness. It's not that something's wrong with having the reaction or etc., but it can be met as it is, which is here. So the stretch of willingness to be free and freed immediately and gradually. So I'm glad you asked that, because sometimes I get confused when people say, so I'm not doing anything like you told me to, you know, and I'm like, I never said not to do anything, never.
Isn't that just the same question as last week of to investigate or to sit back?
Yeah, and that the question of making it either or is questionable too.
Isn't it more like just Tali, is the image that came to my mind? Like eating a Tali.
A Tali.
And you dip the party sometimes in there, and sometimes, oh, and maybe some chili for some. And, you know, sometimes just mix it all together and see, and instead of that, or that.
Yeah. Yeah. And resting into who's deciding what to eat now, like where that's coming from, is also a play. I'm going to go on to the walking instructions. So if there's more questions, you can write a note, come to the one-to-ones, or in the evening, afternoon. So if we could just taste a bit of walking instructions together. Maybe coming to stand up. You could play with the instructions in lying down or whatever if you want to. But if you do stand up, feeling that literal kind of waterfall of the liquids of the body, the movable parts changing their orientation, kind of waterfall going down. And something that's standing up. And letting the waterfalls go down all around the sides. And so there's, we could say, more formal walking meditation and then more casual or organic. And with formal walking meditation, it would just be to find a place that you could walk back and forth or in a circle, feeling your feet or your breath or your back, where you feel home. And with more organic walking meditation, it's pretty similar, except that you have to decide which way to go and how far and all of that. But either way, probably you stand up before you walk. And standing can be a lovely and rich way of practicing in stillness in the hall or outside. And since we have trees around to kind of teach us standing meditation, that could be worthwhile, letting the trees teach you. And one way that can be cool is standing and as we did sitting or lying, feeling the back of the body. Whether you want to start with the backbone and spread out, or just start with the whole back, or start with the back of the main body and then spread into the limbs and head. But it could be cool while standing to feel inviting the front of the body, especially the chest, to kind of soften and rest down towards the lower back. And letting that whole outer rim of the body rest down into the feet. And especially almost as if the back is this really fine sheet of waterfall just rolling down the back into the heels, the backs of the feet. Trusting your feet and feeling that when we trust something, a different response comes, like trusting your feet, maybe the feet feel happy, so to speak, to be trustworthy, to be allowed to have their intelligence of holding us up, of meeting the ground, even blessing the ground. And you could play with, if you want, just taking a couple steps in the hall, or even just with your eyes closed and the legs apart, feet apart, shifting your weight and lifting a foot or almost lifting it. And first of all, feeling where it would be natural for you to rest, if it would be in the hips or the belly or the back or the feet or the whole body. The body and the space around the body, right down in the lower belly or pelvic bowl, right down the middle. And I also, but and would encourage sometimes to really play with the feet, even if you're also in the back of the belly. And just to get the chance to really feel how delightful, how every tiny little movement also is a change in the atmosphere, has a different quality, different feeling. So just about to lift the foot off the ground is different from having lifted. Or starting to press down into the foot. And feeling the outer rim of the foot reach the ground has a quality. And we can feel all of that. It's amazing. So letting that be delightful, almost like playing with pouring sand and letting the sand really pour into the footprint. And then letting the foot that's on the ground pour the sand back the other way. Greeting your foot, greeting the ground, the air. And then lastly, just feeling with movement and wherever you might be resting your energy or attention. That there's so many different qualities of approach, and that makes a difference. The attitude is a huge part of what we bring to the meditation and what comes about. So there could be just really bare and simple sometimes that feels like a fit, and sometimes playful. Sometimes more fluid, more fiery, could be fast. You don't have to walk slow. It's not that the slower, the more meditative, necessarily. But you could love your feet and the ground through your feet, the air through your feet, the movement through your feet. And there could be walking like having a stick that you're drawing on the water. There's just only the immediacy, and it's gone. then there could be like leopard walking or turtle walking. Or wind walking, just to inspire ourselves out of our habits. That real ease and at home on the earth of a wild animal. That's also in there somewhere in ourselves. Any questions?